Sales and Services LLC versus Wegner. And is it Ms. Carlson?
It is.
Good morning to you.
And may it please the court, counsel, I represent the appellants, the defendants below, Michael Wegner and Jerome Pribble. We have a pretty complicated set of facts here in this case. Wegner and Pribble entered into an agreement with a gentleman named Isaac Wall to create a company called Cool Egg. There's a longer name, but Cool Egg's about as much as I can pronounce. And Cool Egg was going to do some farming in Mexico. Well, while they were farming in Mexico, they were going to need pivots. So Wegner and Pribble went to Lindsay and said, we've checked out the competition. We know about the price we can get. Can you do that for us? And they had a meeting on November 29th, 2012. Tim Cho and Luis Mendez from Lindsay get together with Michael Wegner and Jerome Pribble to discuss whether or not they're going to go forward with this business, because at that time, Cool Egg hadn't actually done anything yet. There was a business plan, but that's about it. They hadn't committed to anything. And whether or not we could get pivots from Lindsay. Tim Cho is the credit person for Lindsay, and Mendez is the regional rep for Lindsay down in Mexico. Now, Wegner had known Wall over the years because Wall had purchased equipment from Wegner, so he knew him as a buyer, but not as a seller, not as a dealer for Lindsay. Well, Lindsay represents to Wegner and Pribble, yeah, he's one of our top dealers, great guy, he's honest, you can work with him. If they don't tell Wegner and Pribble, hey, Wall's got two different companies that he's involved in. One is IJS, who, guess what, Lindsay has never done any business with ever. They've never had one single transaction through IJS as a dealer. But Equipos is the other company that Wall owns, or has an interest in. And Equipos has done lots of business with Lindsay. It has been a dealer with Lindsay for a long, long time. Well, when they just say, yeah, he's a top dealer, and they choose IJS to be that dealer of the Lindsay pivots, Wegner and Pribble understand that to mean IJS is the top dealer, because there's no indication otherwise. Lindsay's the one that sends the guarantee to Wegner and Pribble that has IJS on it as the dealer. Okay, well, we flash forward a little bit down the road, and these pivots are sent out in January, February, and March of 2013. And some of the pivots go to IJS. Some of them, if you look at exhibit number 33, those are your bills of lading. That's the document that legally transfers ownership of these pivots to the entity, right? Okay, you look at the first two, they're to Equipos. The consignee, the person that's going to, is to Equipos. Wrong company, doesn't have anything to do with that guarantee. The guarantee is to IJS for the pivots they purchased for Cool Egg. And by the way,
is the address the same on all the bills of lading?
There's a warehouse which is Linea Peninsular, and the warehouse is the same, which might not be wrong because Equipos and IJS, if they're both, you know, owned and operated by Wall, there's no reason he would use a different warehouse. So yes, I think, and by the way, Linea Peninsula is listed as the consignee, as the owner now on one of those bills of lading. Now you can say, okay, that's just a typing on the bills of lading, no big deal, right? Well, okay, but go look at Exhibit 32. Look at those emails internally with Lindsay. When there's confusion at Lindsay, are we giving them to Equipos or are we giving them to IJS? And then there's even evidence in the record. So the pivots never go to Cool Egg. They never get there. Our clients as Cool Egg, you know, I mean, Wegner and Pribble and the guarantee are in their personal capacity, but they're also two-thirds owners in Cool Egg. Never get the pivots that they've contracted for. They weren't supposed to go to IJS. IJS was just a dealer. So this would be like, okay.
Assume for the record that, or assume for argument, that that the pivots never got there. And was Judge Steinke wrong, even if he concluded, yeah, there's some question about whether the pivots got to where they're going. Respond to Judge Steinke's finding that your affirmative defenses should have been struck anyway.
Well, the problem was you directed the verdict on those, and you're not supposed to direct a verdict if there's any question. you know, if the jury, if there's enough evidence in the record to support the jury to examine those issues, and there was enough evidence here on those. So failure of consideration is kind of where I'm going out, because it's never getting there. The collateral, I guess it depends on if you look at them as collateral, because they weren't exactly securing the transaction. But anyway, failure of consideration. If we don't get the pivots, the benefit of the bargain, how is that not failure of consideration? So in the responding brief, Appelli said, well, yeah, but we extended credit to IJS. We didn't care. Michael and Wagner didn't care. Kulig didn't care if IJS got the credit, but for the fact that IJS was supposed to give the pivots to Kulig. They were a dealer. So say, for example, you go to Husker Auto Group here on in Lincoln, and you want to buy a car from Chevy, right? You can't buy that car directly from Chevy anymore. You can buy the pivot directly from Lindsay. You have to go through the dealer, through Husker. So you order a car. Husker Chevrolet keeps your car, and Chevy sues you for the car you never got, because you co-signed on it for your daughter. Maybe your daughter was supposed to get the car, and you guaranteed it. If you never got the car, wasn't there a failure of consideration? Should you have to pay for something that was never honored by the creditor? The stuff never got there. And, okay.
Could you respond to the argument that you waived, your client waived all these affirmative defenses with the language in the guarantee that says, no act or omission of any kind on your part in the premises shall in any event affect or impair this guarantee?
Sure. So where they were going at with that is that it was an unconditional guarantee, which if what we were saying was you had to provide us notice first before you could sue us, or you had to sue Kulig first before you could sue us, we'd have a problem here, because we didn't say there's conditions on that. But when there's an utter failure of consideration for the contract to begin with, the guarantees weren't really all that unconditional if you look at the fact that we still had to get what was promised under them. They still say we're only liable for the amounts due by IJS for Kool-Aid. There's still the basic premise that we have to get something for that, and we didn't. And so I say, okay, it's unconditional as to they don't have to give notice or they don't have to, sue Kool-Aid first, but they still have to give the benefit of the bargain under it, because otherwise there's no amount due and owing for the guarantee to cover.
Does this go to the whether or not, then I'm talking about the language, the no act or omission language, does this go to whether or not the guarantee was conditional, or whether or not under the builder's supply case you affirmatively waived defenses having to do with consideration and collateral and security?
I think it goes to whether or not it's conditional. I don't think you can ever waive a defense based on we never got the consideration under it. It just makes it not valid. You know, I don't think you can waive, oh, I'm buying a car, I never got it, and I still have to pay for it. I just don't think that's something that you can waive. I think once there's no consideration under it, that's a problem. I have 2 minutes left here. I'd like to save for rebuttals.
Thank you very much. Mr. Lingelbach, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is John Lingelbach, and I represent Lindsay Sales and Service International with regards to this appeal. The facts aren't really in dispute, but there are certain facts that are important to the decision that the jury rendered. So the defendants, Wagner and Pribble, were two Nebraska farmers who entered into a contract or an agreement with two other individuals to form a Mexican business entity called Cool Agricola. And the other two members were Isaac Wall and Joaquin Mendoza. And this entity was apparently formed shortly before the guarantees were executed by Wagner and Pearl. Now, the evidence at trial was that Mr. Wagner had known Isaac Wall some 30 years before the extension of credit and the sale by Lindsay. He had, at times, sold 20 pieces of equipment, used equipment to Wall. And I think there was even testimony that Isaac Wall knew his father. So Lindsay did not introduce Isaac Wall to these business partners. They made their deal separate and apart from any interactions with Lindsay. So what happened is, Wagner and Pribble came to Lindsay's office, and they happened to mention that we're in business with Isaac Wall. We understand he's a Lindsay dealer, and he was. He owned a company called IJS, which Tim Joe and Trial, he's our credit manager, testified that that was a cash-only dealer. That company, IJS, had no credit. And so Lindsay agreed to sell to IJS, and that was the buyer, according to the guarantee in the invoices. On the agreement, the Wagner and Cribble would personally guarantee IJS's debt. And if you look at what was required under the guarantee, it was extend credit to IJS. That was the consideration. Nothing mentioned about how many pivots, what kind of pivots, when they had to be delivered. The consideration was extend credit to IJS. So Wagner and Pribble submitted their personal financial statements and their guarantees, and on the strength of those two documents, Lindsay agreed to extend credit to IJS. The pivots were shipped. They were shipped January through March of 2013. And Mr. Wagner testified that he went down to Mexico. I think he said on two occasions he actually saw the pivots on the farm ground. He could identify them as Lindsay's and Maddox. So they made it to Mexico, according to Mr. Wagner.
Would you agree that there's a factual dispute as to whether the pivots got to their intended destination?
Probably a factual dispute that the jury resolved. So there was a clerical error on four. First of all the invoices reference IJS as the buyer. And then it says on account of Cool Agricola, which was required by the guarantees. But some of the bills of lading, I think four of them, erroneously listed Equipos. But there's no dispute that all of the pivots, I think there were 12, made it to the warehouse in Florida, and they made it to Mexico on property that apparently Cool Agricola was leasing. So that, there was a fact issue, and that's a fact issue that the jury decided. Tim Jones testified at trial, he had no doubt in his mind that IJS was the buyer of those pivots, and that's why they were invoiced.
Is that factual dispute relevant to the affirmative defenses that the district court directed verdict on?
I don't think so. You have to read the guarantee, and the guarantee says, we will personally guarantee the extension of credit to IJS. That's all it says. And that was done. There was credit extended to IJS. The real problem here is once these pivots left Lindsay's gate at the factory, they lost control. There was no collateral. It wasn't a secure transaction. And there's a business reason why they do that. But it was an unsecured transaction. And then the four partners decide how they get to Mexico, who ships them, who the importer is. In this case, it was apparently Equipos. And the difficulty for Lindsay was once those pivots got to Mexico, these owners start fighting amongst themselves. Wagner and Pribble testified, we kicked Isaac Wall out of Cool Agricola. And there were lawsuits in Mexico about who controls Cool Agricola, what happens to the equipment. Nothing that Lindsay could solve. So the pivots were shipped January, February, March of 2013, and Lindsay hears nothing for 8 months. In August of 2013, Wagner and Pribble write a letter that say, we're not honoring our guarantees anymore. And the legal reason why they claim they don't have to pay is they claim there was a misrepresentation by Lindsay. When we met with Tim Joe at Lindsay, he told us that this was a good dealer, that this was someone who could be an honest partner of his, that he was a good businessman. First of all, I don't even think those are not factual statements. Those are opinions that I don't even think are actionable. But nonetheless, the district court instructed the jury on misrepresentation, and that was their entire theory of the case, essentially, that you told us Isaac Wall was an honest business partner, and he wasn't. And so they got an instruction on misrepresentation. The jury rejected that. The jury entered a verdict for the invoices in favor of Lindsay. So with regards to the specific assignments of error, first of all, they claimed that Lindsay impaired the collateral, the pivots. There was no collateral. This was an unsecured transaction. There were no UCC filings, no security agreements, no liens whatsoever. It was an extension of credit to IJS on an unsecured transaction. The other assignment of error, failure of consideration. They claim there was no consideration. Read the guarantee. What did Lindsay promise to do? extend credit to IJS, the buyer. And there's no dispute that that was done. So the consideration under the guarantee was given. They complained that the court should have instructed under the Uniform Deceptive Trade Practices Act. That's an act for consumers that basically say if a seller misrepresents certain elements of the transaction, that a buyer can rescind the agreement. One of their complaints is that the judge didn't instruct on the Uniform Deceptive Trade Practices Act. Judge Steinke ruled it didn't apply. Here's the relevant portion, 87, 303.07. If a buyer, keyword, is induced by a violation of the act to enter into a sale, the agreement is unenforceable by the seller, and the buyer at his or her option may rescind the agreement. It doesn't say guarantor. It says buyer. It's clear that the buyer was IJS, or arguably Cool Agricola, owned by four individuals. Neither one of those buyers rescinded this agreement under the act. So what you have is two guarantors who are strangers to the contract trying to rescind agreement between buyer and seller that don't want to rescind the agreement. It would be a strange result if a guarantor could tell buyer and seller, deal's off. There's no deal. So the statute simply doesn't apply.
Counsel, could you address the relevance of the financial statements?
Yeah. So Tim Joe testified that when they came to his office and he explained, look, IJS doesn't have credit. They're a cash-only buyer. The only way I would sell to IJS is you guys have to guarantee it. So they submitted two financial statements, balance sheets. After Mr. Joe reviewed those financial statements from Wagner and Pribble, he made the credit decision. He agreed that he would extend credit to IJS on the strength of their balance sheets. So they signed the guarantees after he gave them the approval. They're part of the transaction. It's not an effort to say these guys are rich and are in judgment against them as has been portrayed, I think, in the brief. It was part of the transaction documents, and for that reason, Judge Steinke allowed them into evidence.
Was there a request to redact any of the information?
There was none. There was none at all. And I don't think the objection to those was even proper. I think it was a relevance objection and not an unfair prejudice objection. So if you review that, I think you'll see that it wasn't even a proper objection to the financial statements. Finally, with regards to their attempted use of the Uniform Deceptive Trade Practices Act, this court said in Mutual of Omaha versus Moranti, 285 Nebraska 747, if the principal obligation is not void but is merely unenforceable against the debtor, in this case IJS, because of some matter of defense which is personal to the debtor, the guarantor may not successfully set up this matter to defeat an action by the creditor seeking to hold the guarantor liable. This defense under the Uniform Deceptive Trade Practices Act only belongs to the buyer, and a guarantor can't avail themselves to that defense. And it makes sense because some stranger, as I said, to the contract shouldn't be able to avoid it. So for those reasons, we're asking that the judgment of the district court and the finding of the jury be affirmed.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for about 2 minutes and 5 seconds, Ms. Carlson?
Yes. Yeah. In the Ronte case, they're just discussing that said it doesn't apply unless it's personal with debtor. That actually wasn't a Uniform Deceptive Trade Practices Act. That was about a trust deeds act. And actually, this wasn't necessarily personal with debtor. This was the guarantor that was misled by the statements that, oh yeah, they're a top dealer for us. It's not so much that Wall was or was not trustworthy, which may be a little buttoned up. It's the representation that IJS was a top dealer when they had never before dealt with any goods for Lindsay whatsoever. Lindsay didn't know anything about IJS to say they're a top dealer.
The jury was instructed on your misrepresentation defense.
I'm not a misrepresentation.
What would a UDTPA instruction have gotten you that a misrepresentation instruction didn't?
Under the Nebraska Uniform Deceptive Trade Practices Act, they define a person engages in a deceptive trade practice when in the course of his or her business vocation occupation, he or she causes likelihood of confusion or of misunderstanding as to affiliation, connection, or association with or certification by another, which is exactly what happened. They caused that confusion when they were talking about, oh yeah, Lindsay, when Lindsay said, IJS is our top dealer, that's the kind of confusion that went wrong in this case, other than the fact that they sent the pivots to the wrong company, which is another matter. On the point about the financial statements, Walmart was exactly the right objection, because that those financial statements weren't relevant to any issue in the case. They weren't relevant to liability, they weren't relevant to damages, they weren't relevant to any defense in the case. They were part of the transaction means nothing, because that wasn't a dispute. We never disputed we signed the guarantees. We never disputed that anything relevant to the financial statements. And there's long-standing case law in Nebraska that says you don't put financial statements in, you don't put any information in about the financial status of the parties. And I've cited those cases. That's one of the reasons why I would please ask you to reverse and remand and let us have a trial.
Thank you very much. Okay, the court is adjourned, and you are excused.